I could see it in your face. It's such a wonderful thing. I was just thinking, man, you know, how I could just get out of here and go with them. And y'all'd be all right while I was gone for just a little while. But it's wonderful to have. This is our second youth choir that we've had here this year. And they have blessed our hearts. And we give thanks to them for coming and sharing with us. I did some of my studies at Dunwoody, as I've already mentioned, and I was talking with some of the young people that in their church they have an engineering feat that was done called a freestanding cross, and they didn't know that, but they wanted to come here a while ago and look at this beautiful old stately sanctuary, and it truly is one of our architectural marvel, and it's a wonderful joy as a pastor to just preach in this blessed pulpit. And so I know Dunwoody is the same. Dunwoody at one time was a church that was on about a 3 or 4 church circuit there in the backwoods of Georgia. And all of a sudden Atlanta moved out and swallowed it up. And there they are. And they still have the old church on the grounds there as sort of a memento of what used to be and of what has taken place. And we give thanks to God for the blessings of Dunwoody and what God has done there. As Christ spoke to the disciples in this passage, he realized that about 50 years later, from this small group of people, the church grew to 500,000 in just a short period of time. As we reflect upon the lives of the disciples and what it cost them, they did not live an easy life. Circuit riders of early Methodism, their lives were not beds of roses. They endured a lot, suffered much, many live for just a few years and then died. But what burned in their soul was the gospel of Jesus Christ. Something worth proclaiming in the backwoods of North America. Something that caused them dedication, sacrifice, preaching in multi-circuited areas. A recent study in Great Britain found that 42% of regular churchgoers fall asleep in church. How many of you have yawned since I've been here? Or maybe yawned in the past? They're telling the truth. I saw them yawning earlier this morning. This all because they slept so well here at Main Street. How many of you have snored since I've been here? Something's going on behind me, isn't it? At least you snored on pitch. So that's good. Just so you know, that yawning might be a sign of some internal medical issues, as reported in the Behavior of Neutral Biology from the University of Maryland in 1987. It might be a sign of a brain lesion, tumors, hemorrhage, motion sickness. I got to keep an eye on this back crowd here. Encephalitis. And so now when you think about yawning, maybe you have a sense of guilt. But in the animal kingdom, when superior animals yawn, the subservient ones turn away. And scholars who have studied animals on earth have witnessed this phenomenon in the wild, in the zoos, at sales meetings, and in church. So if you feel guilty about what I'm talking about, guilt and worry are some of the reasons that people come to church. I remember how many folks were in worship after 9/11. The church I pastored in, the attendance went up quickly, and for those who had family, loved ones that were in the military, they were especially sensitive to what was taking place. And many times I had an individual prayer just for those standing in the aisle of the church, as we called out the names of those in service. And truly during that time, my name could have been called. People who were worried about the future, worried about what was going to take place. Or we come to church because we are concerned about loved ones that may be ill. A marriage that is failing. Finances shaky, or a job just not working out. Some might prefer to worry about things on a grander scale, losing sleep over global warming, relocated nuclear missiles, national debt, or AIDS epidemics. Attending church, we think that that will keep God fully informed on the seriousness of these issues and maybe help to move our personal concerns to the divine, to the top of the divine checklist. But you see, neither guilt nor worry are reasons that we should attend church. Why do we drag ourselves out of bed early on Sunday mornings, wrestle with kids and spouses, form ourselves into some type of recognizable family unit, pile into the car and drive to the church, especially during this time of the year when we have no liturgical issue that is facing the church like Easter or Christmas, when the sun is high in the sky, the days are longer, and there's nothing really to look forward to on the liturgical calendar? But how many days are we into the long season of Pentecost? Visiting this week, I left a home with a question echoing in my heart and in my head. Does this individual truly know what a relationship with Christ is all about? Has this person attended church all these years, and it's just a nice social club? Larry just returned from a week in Florida in intense studies of church worship. And there he found himself on a mountaintop experience. And as he returned to us, he was so full, he really didn't know fully how to express all that he had experienced. And we picked up on it in small doses during the week. And in sharing with Lee and I as we were out and about, and I said, I realize that not everybody has had a mountaintop experience with God. Not everyone in the church maybe has had the heartwarming experience that Wesley alluded to. I remember an old Texan speaking to our church group one day, and the only way he knew how to express it was to say, "Well, I can tell you when God struck oil in my soul." There are different ways to explain it. But there's also the reality to know it, that you have had an experience with God. that you truly, as Wesley said, know that you have faith and that you truly believe and affirm that Christ died for your sins and that you indeed are a child of God. Those old Methodists had that type of experience. And not just old Methodists, but they are new Methodists today that have that type of heartwarming, renewing experience with God. And they truly embrace this faith that's so dear to our heart. I remind you again that even Wesley, after he had his heartwarming experience, was not embraced by the church. The Anglican Church turned its back on him, and Wesley went into the streets and into the prisons and into the fields. And the other day while watching Jeopardy, lo and behold, they said, "What happened to Wesley?" And I looked at my wife and I said, "I know what happened. A farmer released a bull upon him while he was out preaching in his pasture, and they ran him off." Others began to make lots of rackets so that people couldn't hear. And they say they still heard the gospel of Christ. Maybe another question we can ask ourselves this morning is, why do people not attend church? I shared this morning, share with you again, that one of the reasons that I felt so much at peace about leaving one of my churches was I realized that church growth in that small community was going to be, how will this person leave this church and come to your church? Because the reality was that many people had left the church that I was pastoring, and they were in other churches around the community, and they were calling that church growth. It seems to me that church growth truly takes place when individuals begin to experience Christ that haven't experienced Him before. When people begin to hear the good news and Christ begins to touch their heart and their lives. Now, if there's some of you that have come from other churches, we want to keep you. We want you to stay here as a part of this family. But I can look back and see where some of the best members of my church left and went to other places. Some were mad, as I mentioned earlier, the youth minister. And you might not believe it, some were mad at the pastor. Some were even upset about church indebtedness. Certainly not here. And yet these individuals were a part of the church when the decision was made to build. So what contributes to our empty pews? Well, I've heard some folks say that I have my own relationship with God. I don't really need to be a part of a church to be a Christian. My religion is private, my faith is personal. And what they're really saying is, I don't need other people in order to have a relationship with God. And I will speak to you this morning that I don't really know very many unchurched Christians. People that usually are unchurched don't fully understand what discipleship is all about. Frederick II went on an inspection tour of Berlin prison. He was greeted with cries from the prisoners who fell on their knees and protested their unjust imprisonment. While listening to these pleas of innocence, Frederick I was caught by a solitary figure in the corner, a prisoner seemingly unconcerned with all the commotion. "Why are you here?" Frederick asked him. "Armed robbery, Your Majesty." "Were you guilty?" the king asked. "Oh, yes, indeed, Your Majesty. I entirely deserve my punishment." At that, Frederick summoned the jailer. "Release this guilty man at once," he said. "I will not have him kept in this prison where he corrupts all these fine, innocent people who occupy it." Have you ever heard it said, "Well, I don't attend church because it's full of hypocrites"? I guess you could say that's as good a half-truth as anything. Because it's true. The church is filled with hypocrites. Many of us from time to time have been backstabbing, two-faced, hypocritical sneaks more times than we even want to admit. The reality is, the church gives us hypocrites some place to go. And as someone has written, the church is not some earthly antechamber where a contingent of malicious, saintly people gathers a weight to be ushered directly into an especially lofty place in heaven. No, the church is more like the undecorated holding cell in the county jail on a Saturday night. Both are filled with people in various sorts of trouble, and all have sinned, and all have fallen short, and all know that they are caught. And those who complain about the kind of company they are having would have to keep if they came to church are simply demonstrating how well they really would fit in. There are others who say, "Oh, I can worship at the mountains, or at the lake, or on the golf course." And the fact is that the beauty of God's creation does speak to us about the majesty of God. The waves about the unspeaking unchangingness of God. But Christianity is rooted in the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Where else will you hear that story but in a Sunday school class, or from a pulpit, or in the fellowship of the community of believers? Christianity is a revealed religion with a historical tradition. And without a community of faith surrounding us, retelling the stories and traditions again and again, we cannot know Jesus. The great outdoors simply will not tell us about this suffering servant. You will not hear about the Trinity while endeavoring to line up a putt on the 15th green from your buddies standing around. And when you miss that putt, you will not be talking about how wondrously majestic God is. You will not find it in the beautiful long rolling fairways. We hear it in the community. Margaret Mead, person who studies early civilizations, was asked one day, "And what is the symbol? What is the token? What do you find in a civilization as you begin to understand its development? What is the brink of the essence of a civilized society?" She said, "A healed femur." Femur, the leg, the bone right above the kneecap and the leg. Because a healed femur means that someone cared and someone loved and someone nurtured a person so that they could become again an effective part of the society. It is not the law of the jungle. The law of the jungle is only the strong survive. That the young, beautiful ones are thrown many times to appease some type of God. A community that is civilized learns to love. Bill Gates has $50 million. He gave $150 billion. I hope I said billion. I might have said million. He gave $1 billion to a charity to be dispensed over 20 years. You and I, many of us, most of us, some of us can't give that amount of money. Some of you might could. But Jesus, in speaking to this group in this passage, says, whoever gives a cup of cold water to a prophet will receive prophet's reward. I submit to you this morning that hospitality among us is a sign that Christ is welcome. I say to you this morning that the way we treat one another is the essence of who we are. We are called to welcome God into our lives, to welcome God into our community of faith, to welcome God into our world. And the implication behind Jesus' words is that we welcome God into our midst every time we extend ourselves in hospitality and grace to one another. That's why we come to church, to welcome God and to celebrate God's redemptive presence in our lives. All y'all are welcome here to this family. Welcome, welcome, welcome.